Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Did we decide whether it's what verse it is? We're 43.
Sri Shuka Uvacha. Evam Dumantri Bikamsak. Saha Samantriya Durmatihi. Brahma Hingsam Hitam Mene. Kala Pasha Vrito Suraha. Shishuka Uvacha. Evam Dumantri Bikamsak. Sa Samantriya Durmatihi. Brahma Hingsam Hitam Mene. Kala Pasha Vrito Suraha. Evam Dumantri Bikamsa. Evam Dumantri Bikamsa. Saha Samantriya Durmatihi. Brahma Hingsam Hitam Mene. Pala Pasha Vrito Sudaha. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Evam Durmantri Bikamsa. Saha Sammantriya Durmatihi. Brahma Hingsam Hitam Mene. Kala Pasha Vrito Suraha. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Evam Durmantri Bikamsa. Asamantriya Durmatihi. Brahma Hingsam Hitam Mene. Kala Pasha Vrito Suraha. Sri Shuka Uvacha.
Sri
Shukadeva Goswami said. Evam. In this way. Durmantri Bihi. His bad ministers. Kamsaha. King Kamsa. Saha. Along with. Sammantriya. After considering very elaborately. Durmatihi. Without good intelligence. Brahma Hingsam. Persecution of the Brahmanas. Hita. As the best way. Mene. Accepted. Kala Pasha Avritaha. Being bound by the rules and regulations of Yamaraj. Asuraha, because he was a demon. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus, having considered the instructions of his bad ministers, Kamsa, who is bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the brahmanas, as the only way to achieve his own good fortune. Purport. Srila Lochana Das Thakur has sung, Apono Koromo Bunjaye Shomono Kohaye Lochana Das. Instead of taking good instructions from the sages and the Shastras, godless non-devotees act whimsically according to their own plans. Actually, however, no one has his own plans because everyone is bound by the laws of nature and must act according to his tendency and material conditional life. Therefore, one must change one's own decision and follow the decision of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Then one is rescued from the punishment by Yamaraja. Krishna was not uneducated. Rather, Kamsa was not uneducated. It appears from his talks with Vasudeva and Devaki that he knew all about the laws of nature. But because of his association with bad ministers, he could not make a clear decision about his welfare. Therefore, the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila, chapter 22 says, sadhu sangha sarva shastre koi lobo matra sadhu sanghe sarva siddhi hoy. If one desires his real welfare, he must associate with devotees and saintly persons and in this way rectify the material condition of his life. And Prabhupada makes it very straightforward and clear here, our predicament, that in the name of being free, of doing what we want, and of trying to wrest control from the forces of nature, we're becoming slaves.
How does that go?
Yaya sammohito jivo atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartam tatkritam cha abhipadyate. By the influence of Krishna's illusory material energy, the finite living entities are bewildered. Sammohita, totally bewildered. It is a complete illusion. Like three-dimensional wraparound, cinerama, quadraphonic sound, a complete environment of illusion. All sides, all aspects of our life are covered. And what to speak of escaping from the prison? We don't even know we're in a prison. We think we're free. We think we're outdoors with infinite space to go anywhere we want, do anything we want. And actually, we're inside a prison cell. Such a perfect arrangement to keep us entrapped, to make us think that we're not even imprisoned, that we're free. This is how expert the material energy is. And we think we're making decisions, that we're choosing things. We're choosing the path of our life. Whereas we're not. Not only bad ministers, but all the propaganda of the material energy. Nowadays, there's an industry of advertising to convince billions of dollars are spent by large corporations to convince people all over the world, not just the rich countries, but now all the countries are being targeted. The poor people are not being spared. The traditional cultures are not being spared. They're all being attacked with the aim of destroying whatever vestige of traditional culture they still have, to make docile consumers and producers out of them by lying propaganda, advertisement. Convince people that to think they need things they don't really need. That's a great industry. And the whole modern consumer culture is based on it. But this is just a small endeavor compared to the total advertising endeavor of Maya. How she's promoting material enjoyment and material arrangements as what will make us happy. The spirit soul should know that these things will not make him happy. But he's being bewildered by Maya. Yaya sammohito. Jivaha. Being bewildered, atmanam trigunatmakam parubhi manute. Even though he's a pure spirit soul. And what will make him happy is service of the Supreme Soul. Without that, he cannot be happy. The fact of his life is as simple as that. But being bewildered by illusion, he thinks, no, I'm not a servant of Krishna. I am a material thing, and I need material objects for my enjoyment. I'm a man, I need to eat, I need a wife, I need a house, I need a car, I need power, and so many other things, because I think I'm this material body. But opi manute nartam. Even though he's transcendental, he thinks he's something, so he thinks he's an inferior product of matter. And his life belongs to the realm of matter. This is the illusion we're in. Tatkritam cha abhipadyate. And he must suffer the consequences of falling prey to such illusion. We make a wrong decision about the direction of our life, that will have very serious consequences. And we suffer them. Either as demigods or as demons. Those who are illusioned by their motive goodness, they can avoid gross sinful activity. They can avoid degradation. They can gradually elevate themselves, even in the direction of liberation and reattainment of shelter at the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. They can move in that direction. Satvam yad brahmadarshanam. In the mode of goodness, you can get some vision of the absolute truth. You can understand where the aim of your life should be. And you can work toward it if you're situated in the mode of goodness. You can avoid degradation and you can actually work toward spiritual perfection if you can stay situated in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, if you're influenced by the lowest modes, especially by tamogun, then you become asuric, you become demoniac. And everything you do is for your own harm and the harm of the whole world. If you're just a small demon, all you can do is destroy yourself. And if you're a big demon, you can bring some other people down with you. That's the harmful life influenced by the mode of ignorance, the mode of destruction. So you become an agent of destruction, or a victim of destruction at least. Difference between demigods and demons is just that. Which illusion you succumb to. The sattva illusion, and then in the middle there's the rajo illusion and tamo illusion. But it's all illusion. Therefore, we're taught by Srila Prabhupada, and he was taught by his acharyas, that we should not want to become demigods. We should not aspire, or sages, or rishis. We should not aspire to a position in the sattva guna. If we're here cultivating sattva guna, it's in order to facilitate our Krishna consciousness, or because there's need for a particular kind of service. And the service is a service in the mode of goodness. And in order to do that particular service, we have to learn the particular skills and develop this particular consciousness for a special service. But otherwise, just like if you're told that, okay, you know, the GBC is going to purchase airplanes and establish airline service, Hari Bhakti Airlines, and we need devotees to train up as airline pilots. Okay, then you have to go and get special training. You've been asked by the GBC to do that, to fly an airplane from Vrindavan to Mayapur.
then you need to get special skills. You need to train up. But otherwise, it's not our business.
Although my son may still want to become an airline pilot, it's really not the business of a Vaishnava, unless he's appointed that service.
Like that, if we're cultivating the mode of goodness, studying Sanskrit, or, you know, doing so-called brahminical things, it's only for as a particular service
that has been told to us that that the service is required, please do it. You do it. Not everybody's being asked to do this.
Otherwise, we don't have any business trying to be sattvic. Our business is to serve Krishna. Mode of goodness is also a mode of illusion. Anyway, Kamsa here, his dilemma, his unfortunate situation of life is being made very clear here. He may be the villain, supposedly, but actually he's the object of pity for us. He's the sufferer, he's the victim. He's the only one who loses. Everyone else wins in this story. The demons lose. This is, you know, the rule of all the plots in Krishna Leela. The demons always lose. And everybody else wins. And he also will get his liberation, but he has to suffer embarrassment and defeat before he can get his mercy dose from Krishna. The lesson we should learn is don't be like that. Of course, we shouldn't become big demons like Kamsa, but we shouldn't become small demons either. We shouldn't destroy ourselves, even if we don't have the power or the interest in destroying others. Neither should we destroy our own lives. We shouldn't make, and what is the essential element that Prabhupada picks out here? We shouldn't have our own plans. We should submit to Krishna's plans. Because you can't make your own plans anyway. We're all bound by the laws of nature. Yayasa mohito. Maya is bewildering us. We're thinking we're big planners. But all our plans have already been made in advance by Maya and implanted in our brains. You know, they haven't done that yet. They have credit cards, but they haven't put them into our brains yet. That will come in the next decade. They plant electrodes in our brain and we have no privacy and no light, and they don't have to pay money to put advertisements on television. They just broadcast it directly into our brain. That will come. But Maya is already doing that. Our brains are under the control of Maya, and all our so-called plans and decisions are being made for us by Maya. So we're being advised, give that up. You can't be independent. You're going to be controlled. But why be controlled by this hellish illusion when instead you can be controlled by Krishna's divine energy? Mahatmanas tu mam parta daivim prakritim ashrita bhajant yananya manaso gadva bhutadim ovyayam. Person with good intelligence, Mahatma, will take shelter instead of Maya, take shelter of Krishna's divine energy. And be controlled in such a way that he can enter the loving service of Krishna. And by accepting that domination of Krishna's energy, and by accepting the direction of Krishna's appointed authorities, in other words, letting our mind being made up for us, but by spiritual authority, give up trying to make our own plans and accept Krishna as the one who makes the plans. Let Krishna direct our lives as the Super Soul, and until we actually are in touch with the Super Soul, we have to depend primarily on Guru and Shastra as our direction. Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastito. We should accept that Arjuna is not a Brahmana. He's a Kshatriya. He also is advised, not just the Brahmanas, but anybody who is a civilized human being should take the Shastra
the scripture as the guide that decides what is to be done and what is not to be done. Not like demon Kamsa, listening to his own brain and then listening to his bad advisors. Even when his brain has got the right idea, his advisors come and twist it, change it around. So not like someone who whimsically decides, we should decide everything, what to do and what not to do, on the basis of Shastra. That is civilized. Especially if you want to talk about being a Brahmana, you've got to be on that standard first. If you're acting whimsically, no question of being a Brahmana. You're not a Brahmana. If you're making whimsical decisions rather than appealing to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then you're no Brahmana. You're not even a Shudra. A Shudra doesn't know Shastra. He can't even read, probably. He's not allowed to even hear the Vedas. But he is also following the Vedic authority because he's submissive to his master. He doesn't decide for himself what to do. He's told what to do, and he does what he's told. Then he can call himself a Shudra and be proud of it, to be a faithful servant. Otherwise, he's not even a Shudra. If he's whimsical and disobedient and unruly, then he's not even up to the standard of a Shudra. So any person who wants to be counted in the ranks of the order of civilized human society has to give up this whimsical plan making and submit to higher authority. It's the only way to live a proper human life. Human beings are not meant to be whimsical. The animals, the birds, and the beasts are controlled by their instincts. Human beings are controlled by Shastra. But they must be controlled. A human being, an unruly human being is much more dangerous than a snake or a carnivorous beast. He does much more damage. We manage to ravage the face of the earth and make this planet on the verge of becoming uninhabitable. The dinosaurs didn't do that in the hundreds of millions of years that they roamed the earth. These huge creatures, they didn't do damage the way we have. And all the tigers and the poisonous snakes, they can't do the damage that human beings do. So human beings must be controlled. They must be controlled voluntarily through spiritual education coming from Shastra and Guru and Sadhu. Sadhu means the opinion of devotees, the society of devotees, consensus opinion. All three must be dependent on Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Matsipu? You grab a mic? Killed them.
Yeah, so why is it that since the Vedas are Shabda Brahman and that they can only be purified, why is it that there's such a prohibition?
Well, there is. I don't know, ultimately the why, but this is privileged sound. Just like there's, the government has privileged information for eyes only. It's not meant for the general public. It's sensitive information. If the enemies find out, they could use it against the country. So therefore, the public is not revealed to the public. The government tries to let the public know what they can, but some things must be kept secret. So the Vedas can be misused in unqualified hands. And the Shudra, one who does not know how to even begin controlling his senses, who doesn't even make an attempt to undergo samskara reformation and control his senses and get a spiritual education, then he cannot hear the Vedas. Before you begin Vedic education, you must have upanayanam. But there's purushcharana for upanayanam. You must be able to do achaman, to say Gayatri mantra, to know how to, what not to do with your hands and keep yourself clean. You must be a trained in these basic things before you're given the Brahma Gayatri Mantra. And you must get that Upanayanam initiation before you're allowed to study the Vedas. Even a Brahmin boy, his education is just ABC and arithmetic until he gets his Upanayanam. Only after Upanayanam can he begin to study the Vedas. And without Upanayanam, someone cannot. Because the Shudras are unfit to get that initiation, they cannot have any training in the Vedas. They should not even hear them. Even Baladeva Dibhushana, in the Govinda Bhasha, cites the Dharma Shastra statement that if a Shudra is caught listening to the Vedas, you should pour lead into his ears. We say that, but we also say we can take any human being and turn him into a Brahmana. You want to study Vedas? We'll take you, no matter what you are, and make you a Brahmana. We'll give you Upanayanam. No matter what, as long as you have two legs, you know, and some semblance of a human brain, will make you into a proper initiated Brahma, and you can do Soma Yajna if you want. But without that reformation, without the samskara, nobody is allowed to hear the Vedas. Janmana jayate shudra. This is Manu again speaking. This is Dharma Shastra. Janmana jayate shudra samskared hi bhaved dvijaha. By birth, everybody's a shudra. Only by samskara, by purification and training, does one become dvija. And only a dvija is allowed to hear the Vedas. So it's because they have no samskara, you know, no spiritual training and purification, therefore shudras are not allowed. But we can make a shudra, or worse, into Bhakta Brahmana by Vaishnava initiation and by Vaishnava training. Okay? Yeah. Yes, Prabhu?
Yes. Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. I had two things to say. Is it that we're making Brahmins or that we're making Vaishnavas?
We're primarily making Vaishnavas. Just as a byproduct, they're also functional Brahmanas. An initiated Vaishnava has to be considered qualified, fully qualified as a Brahmana, you know, as a secondary byproduct of his being, of his Vaishnava qualifications.
And then a Vaishnava can act in any of the four Brahmins?
Yeah, he can. A Vaishnava is not restricted. A Brahman is restricted. He can't do the work of a Shudra, but a Vaishnava doesn't have that restriction. He can do any work.
And then the other thing I was going to say is that 97% of the Vedas is dealing with karma kanda. Is it not?
Something like that, yeah, 90-something.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And that, so maybe that would have something to do with why sutras are not allowed to hear the Vedas, because most of it's dealing with karma kanda. And as you mentioned, they're not able to control their senses.
Yes, but even the instruction, even the 2% or 1% of the shruti that might be devotional, we don't have direct access to that. We don't have direct access to the shruti in Kali Yuga without the enlightenment, the explanation of the Purana and Itihasa. We can't understand Vedas. Anybody, even a Brahmana, cannot understand in Kali Yuga. So therefore, we need access through the Bhagavatam and books that are related to the Bhagavatam to have any, to the Bhakti Kanda. Even though it's there in the Vedas, we can't understand it. Nobody can understand it in Kali Yuga.
And then we're distributing so many books, Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, we're not distributing rather Vedas. You know, that's not our program.
So Bhagavad Gita is not considered Veda?
No, Bhagavad Gita is pure Bhakti Shastra. It's Gita Upanishad, but it's, everybody has the Adhikar. Every human being has the Adhikar to study the Gita and Bhagavatam. They're special. Yeah, they're designated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be our basic textbooks in Kali Yuga. Yeah, Bhagavatam is also called Shruti, Satvati Shruti, but it doesn't have the restriction that only Brahmins can study it. You know, Gita was intended not only for Brahmarshis, but also for everybody. You know, Krishna meant for it to be distributed. That's why Vyasadeva put it in the Mahabharata. Mahabharata is for a general audience. And if Gita was not meant for that general audience, it would not have been put into the Mahabharata.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Bhartman.
heard this many times, you say 97%, 98% of the Vedas. But then actually, Madhava, he criticizes very much. He says that Vedas are infinite. And even small children there, when they speak, they say, for the Vedas which are infinite, they're just like the Maravadi translated Vedantam, it's end of the Vedas. So they said their foolishness is demonstrated in their very statement that there is an end to the Veda. They're saying that. So if something is infinite, how can you put a percentage to it? How can you say 97%, 98%?
You can take a local sample. See, the Vedas are, there are infinite books in the Vedas, infinite texts, but in a given place and time, only a small fraction of them become manifest. Especially in Kali Yuga, only a small percentage of the Shrutis are manifest. And the Puranas are only 400,000 Granthas rather than 1 billion. You know, the rest of them are not manifested in Kali Yuga. So if we count the finite sample, then we can measure percentage by volume. Not by significance, but by just raw volume, gross volume, we can say 90-something percent is karmakanda. But even that karmakanda, every single mantra in the Vedas can be understood in a higher sense. According to Yaska Muni, standard authority, who wrote the Nirukta dictionary, or book on entomology, not insects, but word derivation. He says every mantra in the Vedas can be understood on three levels: Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik, and Adi Atmik. You can understand a physical description of forces of nature, and we're worshipping the air and the wind and the sun. You can understand that there are personalities, higher intelligences, demigods involved, Adi Daivik. Or you can understand that it's all connected, it's all directed toward the one supreme absolute, the supreme soul, Adi Daivik, Adi Atmik. Every mantra in the Vedas can be understood. So, you know, karmakanda is how they're generally perceived, the bulk of the Vedic texts. But one with the proper vision can see the spiritual essence, even in the karmakanda texts.
Who said that?
Yaska Muni, who wrote the original dictionary, the Vedic dictionary. Nirukta, yes. It's called Nirukta sometimes. Both, he has both now. Nirukti is the class of literature is called Nirukti, and the particular book is called Nirukta. Okay. Yes, sir.
Puranas,
yes.
So
and Veda, he says?
Yeah, Veda.
No, but what was this about Nirvachanam?
Yeah, Loka. The word Loka. Like generally, people will be led to think that Loka means the word.
Yeah, the common, you know, the ordinary world, yes. But
Prabhupada uses Nirvachanam.
Nirvachanam. Well, Nirvachanam can mean the etymological explanation. And the first authority on that is Yaska Muni in his book. It can be understood more generally as interpretation in various commentaries, Nirvachanam. What commentators do is Nirvachanam. They explain what the words mean. So it could be referring specifically to Yaska or more generally to all sorts of commentaries on the texts.
So that means that he gives Loka there, saying that Vedas.
Yeah, because nobody wrote the original Vedas, but the commentaries on them, the books that explain, those are written by particular sages, and then later ordinary brahmanas, pundits, write books, and they're also commentaries on the Vedas. They're also shastra. That's loka shastra. That, you know, the author is a living individual, living being, maybe a human being. That's loka. The authority of loka, laukika authority, is the authority of finite living beings. Whereas the alaukika authority of the Vedas is aparusheya. There's no author. Nobody wrote them. You know, but let's say the Brahma Sutras was written by somebody, by Bhadarayana. We don't pretend that nobody wrote it. But the Upanishads that the Brahma Sutras explain, nobody wrote them. No author. That's a Laukika. But Lokika means it has an individual author. Loke Vede. Vedas are impersonal or eternal authority. The Vedas, nobody wrote the Vedas. The Vedas exist eternally. But Loke, in the authority of living authors who appeared in history and expressed their personal opinions, that's Laukika authority. Maybe a great sage like Vyasadeva. It doesn't mean just any Tom, Dick, or Harry, but a great, even great sages, that's Laukika. I'm sorry. You can say that, but Jiva Goswami is pointing out something of a more confidential realization, that it's eternal Shruti, actually, that the Bhagavatam exists eternally. Not one word of it, of those 18,000 shlokas, has ever can be changed. Vyasadeva simply remembered it like any rishi. He remembered in his heart, in his meditation, the eternal Shruti, and spoke it so we can hear it. So he didn't really write it. He simply passed it on from his meditation. According to Jiva Goswami in Tapasandarbha, Bhagavatam is eternal Shruti. Although externally, officially, it's just Smriti. It's just another Purana. But according to Jiva Goswami and quoting from the Bhagavatam itself, Yatrai Sha Satvati Shrutihi, Bhagavatam calls itself Satvati Shruti. And that's not just poetic exaggeration. According to Jiva Goswami, it is Shruti. It is eternal, unchanging, authorless, the Bhagavatam. Nigama kalpataro galitam palam is the ripened fruit of all the Vedas. Nigama means Shruti, the original Vedas. It's the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree. And where does that sit? Chapter 3 of the first canto. Katam vam pandaveyasya rajarshe muninaksaha samvada samabhutata yatrai shi satvati shrutihi. When did this conversation happen between Parikshit and Shukadev? In which conversation this Satvati Shruti, this Shruti scripture for the devotees, was manifested? That is, must be Shonaka asking. I don't know, somewhere in the first canto, 18th chapter maybe. Yes. Yes.
So how would you relate to that when the understanding is that to become a Vaishnava, you don't become a Brahmana?
Well, you know, our program for becoming a Vaishnava is a disciplined one. We ask people to come and prepare themselves to take initiation. That you actually make your official connection with the Sampradaya. You become part of our school of Vaishnavism. You become officially a member by taking Diksha. But Diksha requires discipline, training and discipline. You've got to be able to chant 16 rounds a day and follow 4 regular principles, basically, and associate with devotees and study Bhagavatam and Gita. Then you can take initiation. Hopefully that standard is being maintained, that initiation is not given out to those who can't do that. And there are those who can't do that, who can't chant 16 rounds, who can't follow all regular principles, and maybe even have some problem associating with Vaishnavas. For them, Prabhupada wanted still that we reach out to such people. We should institute the Vaishnava version of Daivi Varnashram in order to engage people who can't follow the regulative principles of sadhana bhakti and come up to the standard for proper initiation. Rather than give initiation to people who are unfit, which we shouldn't be doing, we should encourage people and engage them in other ways. You know, so to be able to follow the 4 regulative principles and chant 16 rounds, that's our equivalent to the principles of a Brahmana. Yeah, that devotee is certainly a Brahmana if he's following regular principles and chanting his rounds. Those who can't, they can be designated according to the other classes, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Although we're not really ready for that. Nobody wants a label on it. Nobody wants to be labeled. This is a practical problem. People don't want to be labeled. They don't want to be labeled anything but the best. You know, nobody wants to be called a Shudra. A few people, you know, have got some good sense in their head, and they're proud to say, I'm a Shudra. You know, I'm a faithful Shudra. But nowadays, it's rare. Everybody wants to be the best. So it's very hard to actually start stamping people with labels. But we have to prepare for that until people are finally ready to accept the designations. We have to lay the groundwork by encouraging, setting up systems that will encourage people to engage with the Krishna consciousness movement, even if they can't get ready to take initiation. Even if they can't follow the regular principles, we should engage them in some capacity and encourage them. And practically, we're engaging them as Shudras, although we may not use that label. Do something for Krishna, even though you can't follow the rules. Yes, yes. Of course, many of his most prominent students did end up fighting on the wrong side anyway. If he was thinking like that, then he didn't succeed. And many, Drona and Duryodhana and his brothers were fighting for the side of injustice. Anyway, I don't think Ekalavya would have been such a serious threat. Anyway, but he was thinking right, but it really wasn't appropriate. You know, it's theoretically correct, but in practice, you know, he was just being prejudiced. I'm not going to judge Dronacharya, but we can see that some of his other disciples didn't turn out so great.
Didn't Ekalavya fight in the battle also?
I don't remember. Did he?
He fought for the Kauravas.
For the Kauravas. Okay. Because he was rejected by his guru. I mean, it's out of resentment, I guess.
Who did he fight for? For the Kauravas. Sorry, not the Pandavas. Mahabharata Tatpurya is a very nice explanation that you given Mahabharata Tatpurya Nirnaya.
Okay.
About this.
Take the mic.
He says that just like there are insults to knowledge. Like if you use Brahmastra to bind someone, and if you try something else over that, then the Brahmastra gets offended. So, like, it just releases that person, and the effect of the Brahmastra just goes up. So there are some things like offense to the knowledge that you're having.
Yes.
So if you use the knowledge that you're having for some very trivial thing, then it's also a very big offense.
Yes.
Like the others, like Duryodhana and others, they use the maybe on the wrong side, but they didn't use it for something so trivial.
Yes.
They used it against weapons which were thrown by big archers like Arjuna and others.
Yes.
But Ekalavya, he used it to shut the mouth of a dog, whereas it's the nature of the dog to bark. So using such sublime knowledge for such a trivial thing is an offense to the knowledge. So
okay.
Acharya decided to take it against him.
Okay. He's justified. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Yes, we
in this form, as far as I understand, we regard Diksha as Harinam is also considered Diksha.
Yes.
But many of the other Gaudiya Sampradayas, they seem to think only Brahmin initiation is Diksha, Harinam is not.
Well, it's just a matter of deciding when the initiation is finished. I mean, actually, initiation, full initiation, should include the Vishnu Mantra. It technically isn't finished until you get second initiation. But it's a matter of Prabhupada's personal attitude. that he considered those who were only, say, half initiated, at first initiation, he considered them his full-fledged disciples. That was his personal choice, that he decided to give his full attention and shelter to those people. It's not a matter of Shastric injunction. It's a matter of Prabhupada's personal choice that he accepted these people as his disciples. That's his business. You know, he's free to accept someone as his ward, as under his protection, even though the initiation is not finished, technically speaking. So it's just that, you know, he's going beyond the letter of the law and extending his compassion, whereas other Gaudiya Vaishnavas may be more fussy about it, that you're not really initiated until you get second initiation. And many Gaudiya Vaishnavas only have one initiation. They don't split it into two parts. They give everything at once. Some do. Yeah. Yes?
I seem to remember that actually it was a Mudavis Guru Maharaj. I seem to remember hearing that was a Mudavis spiritual master Shri Bhakti.
That he considered the first initiates to be full disciples?
No, to put more emphasis on the...
Second.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a little hard to trace out the ancient history of the Gaudiya Math, because there's so much politics involved. It's filtered through so many, you know, personal agendas. It's hard to see to find out the history of what was actually going on 60 years ago in the Gaudiya Math when Bhaktisiddhanta was there. But I guess we can say, as far as we can see from what people say, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also put more emphasis on second initiation.
He started that, actually.
Yeah. Well, he started the two-tier initiation process of splitting it up. Although I think some other Gaudiya Vaishnavas do it. I know in other sampradayas they do it. They have Samanya Diksha, you know, in which you just receive some mantras, and then you have a second, even third, fourth initiation. So there's some precedent for it in other sampradayas. But in our he did make a radical move of splitting up into two initiations, and he incorporated in the second initiation the Brahma Gayatri, which other Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't do. This is very radical. Because, you know, according to what everybody else says, only a born Brahman should get the Brahma Gayatri. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati just, you know, intentionally violated that rule to make a point that the Vaishnavas are Brahmins, and we don't care what you and all your Shastras say. So yeah, it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But Prabhupada personally, you know, wanted to consider his first initiates as his full-fledged disciples. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I guess we can stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.